Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast brought to you by Big Rod. I don't know. I wanted to see what that sounded like. This is a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast and who are not in the pocket of Big Rod. I'm one of your hosts, Benjamin R. Harrison.
I'm your other host, Adam Pranica. I like your second intro the best, Ben. That sounds more like us.
Yeah. Adam, I was looking at our Facebook group the other day, and this will be like a little bit old by the time this episode comes out, but people were coming up with a drinking game based on our show, which is an idea that I really like.
Is it the Ron Canada drinking game?
Frankly, yes.
I think that just seeing Ron Canada do something is all the excuse anybody should need to have a couple of pops, right?
Oh, you know, you say it like that, it sounds like you need a beverage to get through a Ron Canada performance. That's something that I don't believe in at all. How dare you besmirch the good name of Ron Canada?
What I'm trying to say, Adam, is that it's automatic celebration time
when
Ron Canada's popping off.
That's true.
You know?
We need a Ron Canada horn.
Yeah.
So people are coming up with rules for a drinking game while listening to our program?
Yeah, so Brittany suggested this, I think, and she came up with some kind of seed ideas, and you drink when, for example, we say, we've just lost listeners. You drink when Kevin Uxbridge shows up on the program. That might be the worst Uxbridge I've ever done.
Oh. You know, like, it's getting worse the further away from Survivors we get.
We might just have to start rewatching Survivors at the end of all of this.
I think
just
that's a good
over
idea.
And over again.
It's like that one podcast that just watches Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 every year.
Yeah.
Maybe we just do a Survivors episode regularly.
That might be the right move. Six Bay is a drinkable moment.
Yeah.
Lawyer Picard is a drinkable moment.
Yep.
Big Dog is a drinkable moment. So
not a lot of room to catch your breath with all these.
I know.
Your drinks better be the kind that are like the tequila popper, which is like half tequila, half Sprite. Like, you got to really dial down the alcohol of these drinks, because you're going to be drinking a lot. It's almost like a Century Club type situation, right? Just line up your shots of beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to you want to have kind of a battle plan going in, because, you know, like, if you're doing shots of beer once a minute, you're going to inevitably need to pee before the 100 minutes is up.
I recommend that most people listen to our show in the bathroom anyway. So they can do the drinking game in there. They're ready to pee. You're probably going to want to take those last drinks over the toilet anyway.
Well, Adam, I just love the idea of this drinking game. And there's a great thread with people suggesting things to provoke drinking. And I would love to hear more ideas.
As a person who has an adjunct podcast whose sole purpose is to encourage drinking, that doesn't surprise me that you would have that position.
Well, as the person who has been on it most times as a guest, Adam, I'd be surprised if you couldn't get on board with it also.
Yeah, I'm on board. Count me in. This is something we could never do in a live show format, right? Like, they wouldn't let us drink on stage at one of the venues.
Yeah. Yeah, there was some weird thing where, like, we could drink, but we couldn't open a drink or something, right? Because we wanted to, like, open a beer, and they were like, oh, you can't open a beer. That would be, you know, that would get us in hot water.
Yeah, it's like that thing when you go to a concert or a baseball game. Like, they have to open the beverage for you for some reason. Otherwise, you're going to turn it into a projectile.
And we're like, we didn't record the sound effect, and that's, like, the most important part about it.
And I'm like, this beer is not for throwing, it's for consumption.
Right. Right.
It's for throwing into my mouth.
Right. And also, like, you would, like, the concern at a baseball game is not that the shortstop is going to take a closed brew dog and chuck it at a fan, you know?
No, we don't have those kind of viewers.
No. I think that the logic in that was all messed up, but it was like a letter of the law, not spirit of the law type of situation.
And I think if there's one thing that's sure, you and I are spirit of the law people, aren't we?
Right. You know who's not a spirit of the law type person, Adam, is Lieutenant Worf.
Hmm. I see what you're trying to do, Ben. You're trying to elicit a pivot to season 5, episode 16, ethics.
It's hard when it's just one word.
Yeah. Instead, I decided to give it the question mark.
So we're doing some scanneroos in the cargo bay. What's the deal? There's like a leak? Something's leaking?
Yeah, they got a leaky drum. And my question for you is, Ben, why is Worf on this duty? Like, they're doing leaky drum scans, and it's Geordi, who is, like, perfectly suited to inspect for leaks.
Yeah. Why? Where's Barclay?
And
he's
Worf.
Like, Barclay's not there. He's got special leave to host his right-wing radio show.
Another convenient absence for plot. If I were Worf, I'd be pissed. This seems to be below his pay grade, this sort of work.
Right. Well, it's also just, like, as a plot device, a strange choice, because there's lots of scenarios I could see Worf being in that would get him a back injury. And this is so pedestrian, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like, he could... So, let's talk about what happens. They're scanning for a leaky barrel, and Geordi confides in Worf that he's a card cheat.
That was unbelievable.
I was shocked at this.
I mean, I believe that Geordi would cheat at cards, just based on some of his other behavior.
Yeah.
Like, poor impulse control type stuff.
And for an engineer, poor impulse control is a career-limiting thing to have.
But yeah, he uses his visor to look through the cards. And I think we've speculated about that being a possibility, right?
Worf is telling a bad beat story, which is the most boring story for anyone to listen to if you play any cards at all. He's going on and on about how Troy bluffs him. And Geordi's like, you just can't see things the way I can. And he sort of taps his visor. Oh, that would make me so angry if I were Worf. And for whatever reason, Worf, like, sort of shrugs it off.
It's weird, right? Because that, like, it is a big deal to that you don't know what somebody had if they went around, you know?
Card cheating is without honor. Like, Buffalo Bill was shot because... Actually, that's not true at all. Like, people die at card games for accusations like that.
Yeah, have the 30-somethings that you play cards with in Seattle been known to draw weapons on each other if somebody's suspected?
Well, I didn't mention how contemporary that problem was, Ben, but but a long time ago in Deadwood, that could be a thing.
You mean the time that you went to Deadwood to do drone videography?
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't happen then either, but I knew it was that sort of place.
Yeah, okay. So you didn't bring any of your fancy shuffling techniques to Deadwood with you.
I didn't.
Is that what you're saying?
I left those in the room.
Well, yeah, so they're scanning. Worf is brushing off the fact that Geordi is a damn cheater, and there's like a barrel that I guess they can't, despite all the tricorders in the room, they can't localize whatever is leaking, and there's a barrel up on a high rack that starts kind of sagging because it's getting a little melty, and a big giant barrel falls off the rack and takes Worf out.
Look out!
Commander, what happened?
LaForge to sick bay. Medical emergency in cargo bay 3.
I think about this a lot. Like, you go into a Home Depot or a Costco, and things are just like up in the steel, really high, and it all looks really heavy.
Have you ever been to a winery?
Yeah, same deal. It seems impossible.
Yeah, like, they're so heavy. You feel like, I don't know. It just seems insane to let inertia be the only thing keeping anything there.
Yeah.
Especially when it's in, like, you know, wine country in the U.S. anyway is pretty tectonically active.
It's true.
This ship has bangers dropped on it frequently. Why would they stack barrels that high?
Oh, God, you're right. I didn't even consider the bangers.
Yeah. They have bangers dropped on them out of the blue, like, several times a season.
They never cut to the storage bay showing all of these barrels fly around. I'd love a cutaway to the barrels.
You want to see the cutaway every so often. The closest they ever get is in the movie Star Trek Generations. They do a lot of cutaways during bangers, and they show, like, kids falling off the top bunk and stuff.
That's always fun. If you're a child actor, I think that's a whole genre that you try to go for, the falling off the top bunk genre.
Yeah, yeah. That's nice work if you can get it.
Yeah. You don't want to get typecast as a bunk guy, though.
No, yeah. Yeah, because if you do two bunk falls in your career, and... casting directors are not going to see you as anything but a bunk faller.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing that is really disappointing about this is, do they can never get something that is clearly like an empty plastic container that probably weighs like 2.5 pounds to look really heavy?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same problem when they have like somebody moving boulders around and it's just a styrofoam fake rock.
Yeah.
It just doesn't fall right, you know? It doesn't look like something that would actually hurt.
This is hundreds of years into the future, and it's weird that, like, rack stacking technology has not changed. Like, there are like, confinement beams for prisoners and stuff. And yeah. Here they are stacking heavy objects up in the steel, and there's no beam safeguard at all. It's just barrel on barrel.
It's really, like... it's really bad safety practice, you know? They're going to have to go up to that banner and roll back the days since the last needless injury to zero.
Now, when you're stacking barrels up in the high steel, you're going to want to use a forklift that's been inspected within the past 4 years. You'll know that your forklift has been inspected properly by the sign-off sheet posted on the steering wheel.
Federal regulations stipulate that the load manifest of a barrel lift. I'm reaching for specifics that I already know I don't have.
It's hard enough to do it for like house references, like
yeah. Warehouse safety rules is like a whole nother.
Yeah, we gotta bail out of that pit.
I'm sorry, everybody. I know that everybody loves this old Enterprise.
So a barrel on top of a barrel mushes down the barrel beneath it and flings itself onto Worf. And yeah. Worf sees it coming and sort of turns his back to it and absorbs the entire barrel with his back.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that has not had good back luck. You remember when he was thrown over that balcony last season?
Oh, yeah. That's
and he
true.
Broke his neck and died? He's died from this.
Anytime he goes to a room that has Bay in the name, he should be he should have his head on a swivel.
Yeah. So
Worf has worse luck with bays than he does with doors.
Hmm. It's true. So Worf gets taken down, and it's not looking good. They throw to commercial. One of the more intense cold opens we've had.
Yeah. Well, speaking of cold opens, he opens his eyes in Six Bay, and Dr. Beverly is there to explain to him that he is not, in fact, in a confinement field the way those barrels should have been. He's been rendered paraplegic because that barrel crushed, like, half of his spinal column.
Yeah, I think she says, like, 6 or 8 vertebrae.
Yeah.
Which is an incredible amount of vertebrae.
Yeah.
This is an episode where we get to know a lot of Klingon anatomy.
Yeah, they go deep on Klingon anatomy, and there's some fun world building. Like they talk to the Klingon medical people, and they're like, "Yeah, no, we don't really study any of this crap. Like, we just let people buy it."
I get the feeling, like, you know how when you go to a doctor's office and they have the giant, you know, walls of file folders back there, like for patients.
Yeah. Sure.
That the Klingon version of that is just a burn barrel. Beverly's complaining, like, I tried to get some intel from Klingon Six Bay, and they just laughed me off the phone.
Yeah. So Worf is stuck here, and to try and help the situation, the good folks at Starfleet have dispatched the Hood to deliver a doctor who specializes in this type of spinal injury.
Ben, point of order here: that ship was called the Potemkin.
Was it really?
It was, and the doctor they dispatched ran in slow motion down the stairs to the transporter pad.
What? I don't know what that reference is.
It's a little Battleship Potemkin reference for all our film students out there. No?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a 2%er, isn't it?
Never seen it.
Drake!
So Dr. Russell is the spinal surgeon, and she's like a big fan of Dr. Crusher's, you know, tries to get on her good side early.
She's got some real Pat Sajak hair.
Yeah, she does. She's a little bit Sajak-y. That's not a bad call. She also has like a weird frock. Like, she's from, I thought she was from Starfleet, but she doesn't seem to be dressed like she's from Starfleet.
Yeah.
She's dressed like she's from like Starfleet Central Intelligence or something.
They got weird with the costuming this episode in a number of areas.
Yeah, it's like,
for instance, Worf is dressed in carpet remnants.
I guess that's part
of his recovery.
Yeah, Worf's pajamas look like they're made out of the carpet from an airport lounge.
Yeah, they really, like, it's a good thing he can't move, because I'm not sure he could move anyway. Like, his clothes look very stiff.
Right. Yeah,
he's up on the starch, Bev.
Right, and like, you don't want that much tensile strength in a pajama, you know? It's just unnecessary.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Dr. Russell has some pretty advanced ideas about how spines can be repaired. And
she's got some Mengele vibes, too, right?
Like, yeah.
She seems more interested in experimentation than giving any sort of bedside care.
I know that as a starship doctor, you have to maintain close ties with patients. But I think it would be best if I maintain a discreet distance. That way I can give you a completely objective opinion regarding treatment.
And at the time, I didn't really think much of it, but it totally builds her character as a, like, experimenter. She can't,
right.
She can't,
I don't
do
make
all
a connection.
Her... Right, yeah, exactly. She doesn't want to get attached to the cow that she has to slaughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not supposed to name the frog that you have to dissect in science class.
Right.
And she has a good pedigree, you know? She comes from this research institution. She
has some pretty advanced stuff that she's been working on. But the conflict is very early established that Dr. Crusher has ethical, like medical ethics misgivings about how Dr. Russell pursues her research, and she thinks Dr. Russell is trying to push this kind of advanced, untested treatment on Worf before, you know, more well-tested and conventional treatments are explored.
This is sort of teased out a little bit in the B story. So they get wind of a downed ship in an adjacent sector.
Yeah, this is even like the C story, I would say.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, not to
really
quibble
in the
with
background
what letter you're putting it on.
Yeah, it's like, it's lowercase d.
But yeah, shit is really popping off. I feel like anytime there's kind of a doctor-centric episode, they like to throw a ship that needs like hundreds of people to receive medical treatment into the mix just to make things interesting.
The accident they describe sounds incredible, and we don't see any of it.
Doctor, the transport ship Denver struck a gravitic mine left over from the Cardassian War that sustained heavy damage.
Their last message said they were attempting to crash land on one of the planets in the Maricor system. We should arrive in just under 7 hours.
How many people were aboard?
The Denver standard crew complement is 23, but they were transporting 517 colonists to the Bilati sector.
And they need, it's sort of like an all-hands-on-deck situation. Like, they ask for all the civilians with medical experience to report for duty because they got to beam some bodies up and nurse them back to health. It's like real, it's like a real Civil War battlefield situation is yeah, what they're painting us, and we don't see any of it.
Yeah, it's all kind of implied.
Yeah.
Well, Riker, at the 3-day mark, finally gets around to going down to Six Bay to poke his head in on Worf, which I just thought was unbelievable. Like, Riker and Worf are thick as thieves. And
how long would it take you to visit your best friend who had been paralyzed?
Yeah, was paralyzed in the hospital? I'd be there, like, that day.
Not only that, Ben, you live in the hospital where he's a patient. Like, it's right, not like you have to drive 3 hours to get there.
It's a matter of an elevator and a hallway.
Yeah. We see a montage of Riker just, like, going from work to home, to 10 forward, to holodeck, to home.
Dealing himself out some solitaire in his quarters.
He's like, I'm really doing great at the poker game. Something's different about this table.
Well, he eventually gets down there, and Worf is like, "Listen, dude, I'm not too upset with you, you know, letting me just lie here rotting for a few days, but I could really use your help.
I have a personal favor to ask.
Name it.
I want you to assist me in performing the Hekba ceremony.
What I need is for you to go get that crazy knife from my quarters and bring it back here. I'm going to use it to take my own life because that is the only path to honor that I have at this point. Klingons are not allowed to be paraplegics."
Riker is not great about this request.
No, he doesn't entertain the idea even for a moment, I would say. I mean, like, he's thinking about it a lot, but he's not, at no point does he give any serious consideration to helping Worf do this.
And just in case the viewer was confused, I'm pretty sure they smash cut from the Six Bay into the ready room, and Riker's just screaming at Picard about this.
Yeah.
Like, it's an emotional anybody canyon in that ready room. He's like, I can't kill my friend. That is completely idiotic. And Picard, who is basically our stand-in for Klingon culture, is like, yeah, man, it's just their way. Sometimes you just got to kill a friend out of mercy.
To me, this kind of evoked two things. One,
why
is
does
like,
my Picard always turn into a hippie? That seems to be a leitmotif that I'm giving him.
Yeah, I mean, he's not really that chill a dude.
No, he's not. But all of his opinions are super chill, though, right?
Yeah. At the yeah, when you distill them down, they're pretty chill. But the, like the way they're delivered is there's no Rasta on it at all.
I'm giving them a terrible line reading. Is what I'm doing. I'm giving them a Rasta line reading.
The two things that this scene evoked for me is one, like it's got to be unbelievably rare for people to be paraplegics in the in the Federation, like this is like an insanely crazy injury that that the doctor can't repair it, you know, like she can repair all kinds of shit, so it's got to be like pretty intense, like just like a person who like literally has never heard of somebody being a paraplegic in this time and place is basically being asked to consider going through life as one now.
Did you get the vibe that it was because he was Klingon or because it was unique that his level that the damage to him was so great?
I thought it was the latter. Yeah. But
they don't make that clear.
But the other thing that this evoked for me was like this kind of speaks right to the problem with the Prime Directive, which is Riker has this discomfort with the morality of helping Worf take his own life, and Picard is like, hey man, like it's none of your fucking business, you know, which is like, I think it is. I think if I'm being asked to make a moral judgment here, I don't want to help my friend stab himself with a weird poison serrated knife.
I understand how a friend of Worf could feel that way. And a senior staff member could feel the way that Riker is explaining. Yeah. I'm a little surprised that this is Riker's opinion. It, like, I don't know. Like, I don't really have much to support that contention, but it seems out of character. It seems like Riker, without having begun this episode, would be the type that would help Worf die because he loves him that much.
I think that under different circumstances, he would be down. But yeah. to Riker, this doesn't seem like a suicidable scenario.
Right. And yeah, they even make the case. Like, Picard's like, how would you feel if you were looking forward to a remaining lifespan of pain and humiliation? And Riker's like, Worf's not going through that. He's not in any pain. Like, he just wants a way out.
Yeah.
They have a pretty sophisticated argument about this.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that, like, this may be... They're, like, in a weird way, this is a Riker episode, because Riker gets a bunch of big dialogue scenes where, you know, he has this big confrontation with Picard over this, and later he has a big one with Worf, and I think he has another one with Troy, even. Like, it's kind of about like what Riker's going through more than it is about what Worf is going through.
Isn't it interesting how it ends up that way so often with him? Like, this is painted as a Worf episode in the same way Best of Both Worlds was supposed to be a Picard episode, but like,
yeah,
everything lands on him.
They let Alexander see Worf finally, and that's been, like, even more days than it took Riker to go see him. And I guess Dr. Beverly and Dr. Russell come in with this kind of B-minus rehab plan, which is put some straps on Worf's legs, and when he's done davening, he can start trying to walk around again.
Yeah, they lay it out in terms of percentages, right? They're like, look, you know what? With a little practice and these straps and...
these tefillin that we'll put on you?
Yeah. Like we'll give you 60% of your mobility back.
And Worf is like, feh!
What I was thinking is like it's hard to know if those are acceptable losses to him because most of the time Worf is like really into acceptable losses.
Yeah.
Like, large numbers of them. But does he have to yell towards Stovacor at like 40% volume to let Stovacor know that like part of his body is coming?
Portion of a warrior is on its way. Yeah, I mean, the other percentage that's given here is the percentage likelihood that this crazy treatment that Dr. Russell is working on will work, which is like 37%, I think.
Even a holographic patient would balk at those odds.
And that's like 37% he will survive the treatment, not that he will recover 37% fully. As good. Yeah, so I feel like Worf is much more into that as a percentage than 60% better.
Data hears these percentages of death and he's like, huh, yeah, like, you know what team I'm on. You know what I would advocate?
Yeah.
Beverly is super clear with Dr. Russell. She is like, do not present this as an option to Worf. We don't need to give him the idea that there's a miracle cure out there. These straps are what it's about. We're going to go straps. Straps is the plan.
I don't know much about medical ethics aside from the like casual reading a New Yorker article I've done from time to time. But I do feel like when a patient wants to try an experimental treatment, that's given some consideration typically, right?
Oh boy, we're going to get letters. I get the sense that it is far more difficult to undergo experimental procedures than I think many patients would like.
Well, it's definitely like a big point of contention, but Dr. Russell and Dr. Crusher have to drop their argument for a moment because the dancers from the opening number in La La Land have been beamed on board and need some medical attention.
Yeah, they came from the USS Primary Colors. The USS Color Wheel.
Yeah, I guess the shuttle bay has been turned into a triage ward and they're walking around. There is a lot of nasty looking cuts and burns on different people.
There's sheets over faces, so you know it's bad.
Yeah, and I think Dr. Crusher is like working on somebody and she looks over and Dr. Russell is like covering somebody up that has just passed away. And she's like, what the fuck just happened there?
It is the most chill on-screen death like that you could ever see.
And Dr. Russell's like, yeah, oh, well, I was just trying one of my like completely far-fetched experimental treatments on this guy, and it didn't work. But the data that we gathered in the process is invaluable.
And Beverly's like, penicillin would have cured this person. Like, what are you doing?
All the prognosis called for is a couple of Aleve.
Yeah.
This was madness.
This patient had diarrhea.
And this is like, this kind of speaks right back to the crux of their argument.
I think you used this situation in order to test one of your theories, just like you're trying to do with Worf. That's what this is really about, isn't it? Lieutenant Worf.
And so Dr. Crusher walks out in a huff, and she's in her office, and Picard comes down, and he's like, hey, listen, I think that crazy doctor who keeps doing Mengele shit to people, I think you should hear her out. I think she's got a lot of really good ideas.
Hey, Bev, you know, maybe we should just try out some of these experimental drugs and stuff. Legalization.
Let me just close this door and roll up a towel and put it on the on the bottom edge of it. Do you want to puff pass with me?
This really seems like a leap to me. Like, Picard comes out of nowhere to advocate for this experimental procedure.
Yeah.
It seems like he was engineered to do this. Like, I don't see any character motivation for it.
Klingon or no, he is going to have to accept his condition.
Beverly, he can't make the journey you're asking of him.
He doesn't illustrate his reason in any personal way. He's not like, look, we all love Worf and we need to do whatever it takes to put him back to 100%. Like, he doesn't even make an emotional case. He makes sort of a practical medical case. And that's the part of it that rang empty to me. It doesn't read as Picard. It reads as any character.
Yeah, like, it could have just as easily been Riker if Riker wasn't...
It could have been Ogawa.
Right, yeah. Well, Ogawa's been pretty silent up to this point. But yeah. I guess this is enough to talk Crusher into going forward with this. And so the next thing that happens is Riker comes in and kind of lawyer Riker's Worf with this suicide plan.
I am ready, Commander.
I've been studying this ritual of yours. Do you know what I've decided? I think it's despicable.
I really admired his lawyering in this scene.
Yeah, it was like, hey, listen, I looked into the precedents surrounding this, read some of the court cases, and it's not me that should have been asked. It's your son.
He walks in with a towel and a knife. And this Klingon knife, the suicide knife, Ben, it's like covered in fish hooks and barbs.
Yeah.
We get a little glimpse. I mean, we hear a little bit about what the suicide ritual is. And it involves plunging the knife into one's own heart, pulling the knife out, and then wiping it on the person who helps. Like, the heart's coming out with the knife, right? Like, do you see all the backwards pointing barbs? I don't know how you get it out of your own chest.
Yeah. You would think that you would be too dead to do that at that point.
Yeah. You're going to need some help pulling that still beating heart out.
But this is like, you know, this is a second scene in a row where an impassioned case is made and the obstinate character sees the light. So Alexander comes in and Worf is like, hey man, I'm going to do something that's even scarier than kill myself. I'm going to not kill myself.
All of his special dad moments with Alexander are so terrifying. Like, yeah. A couple episodes ago, he was like, you want to know the most dangerous thing that you could do is allow me to be your dad. Are you ready for that? He's like, yeah. This scene, he's like, nothing's more dangerous than me trying to walk around an apartment filled with knives. Are you ready to witness this? Alexander's like, sure. I'm in.
Yeah. It's like, now run on back to the room with this terrifying knife.
Yeah. Not the right person to give that knife back to.
No, too small a child to be handing something like that.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurseth the disease.
And we fade back up, and everybody is in those surgical scrubs that Starfleet officers wear.
Oh, come on, Jerry, you gotta see the operation. They're going to cut him open. His guts will be all over the place.
Which I really like. They've got the built-in fez.
Yeah.
And, it's like a unitard that goes up and over the head. But for some reason, they've chosen a fez top to it.
What we don't know yet is that Moroccan medicine will be the form of medicine practiced far into the future.
Yeah.
They're really betting it all on Moroccan medicine, aren't they?
Yeah, they sure
as world builders.
This is like the tense surgery scene that we rarely get in this series. They got the surgical theater. Jerry and Kramer are up there eating a box of Junior Mints.
It's real Shonda Rhimes shit too. Like there's some med speak happening.
Focus the Drechtel beams on the anterior and posterior spinal nerves.
Focused.
Initiate.
Yeah, a lot of nice techno babble. They flip Worf over, and Adam, were you aware before this scene that Worf had backloaf?
I was not.
I was really delighted to see the backloaf.
I think, you know, when you're going through adolescence and you deal with face acne, often people forget about the back acne.
Yeah.
And I guess
anytime you go to a pool party and that stuff is exposed, it's just devastating.
Yeah, I think we probably shouldn't be surprised that a person with head loaf would also have some back loaf. But there it is.
Yeah. You should ask Beverly about a Bacutane prescription.
This surgical procedure seems really intense. They've got this this substitute backbone in a tray next to the operating table.
We'll open the peritoneal cavity, exposing the body's internal organs. Nurse, retractor.
They've got Worf flipped over, and I guess the idea is they're just going to swap out his backbone, right?
Like it's like when you like do an engine rebuild on a car, like you hoist it out, and take it over, and like you bring the new one in and lower it down. There's like a gummy worm that I guess is the like replicated spine that they're gonna put into him.
Into the patient.
What do you mean into the patient?
Into the patient, literally.
They get pretty explicit with the surgery.
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly stuff. I mean, there's no like over the top into the hole shot.
Into the hole?
Yes. The hole.
But they definitely show some gore. There's some more blood and guts in this episode than we normally get. I mean, there's plenty of marinara splattered all over everybody in that cargo bay, so.
Yeah. They cover his back with foil when the surgery's over. Put him in the fridge.
Yeah, well, they just, you know, you let it rest for 5 or 10 minutes before you serve it. Because...
You
I mean, that's true of loaf, that's true of a burger, that's true of a steak.
Yeah. You can't have a surgery scene, Ben, without losing the patient.
Yeah.
And what, as Worf circles the drain... They basically have that scene where the doctor electrocutes the patient over and over again using a loaf stimulator that Nurse Ogawa applies to his head loaf. He just she just smushes it right in.
It's it's one of those scenes that kind of exposes how soft the loaf really is. Yeah. You know? Like, I think we're kind of meant to think that's you know, pretty tough stuff.
There's another scene that gives that away, too, when Alexander is crying and he visibly cannot touch his head. Like, he has been told, do not touch your own loaf. Yeah. And he sort of, like, holds his hands hovering over his eyes.
Well, he's a little kid, you know? He's gonna be tempted to lick his fingers if he touches some loaf, you know?
Who wouldn't be?
Yeah. Not a bad performance by little Alexander, though. I mean, like, I thought it was a pretty effective breakdown.
He's good he's not good by himself, but he's good playing off other actors.
Yeah, and Troy's there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty rough little scene. And they're all just kind of like standing around going like, holy shit, Worf is fucking dead, man. He's dead.
Did it seem to you that the first time you saw this episode that this was real? Kind of a lot of time goes by that with Worf's dead body. It seems like they passed the point of no return, and I remember when I saw this episode for the first time, I was like, holy shit, it's almost the end of season 5. Like, they're going to kill off another main character. This is it.
Yeah, and I was in watching this this episode before we recorded today. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Because I know that there's Worf in subsequent episodes. Like, how the fuck is he dead? What's going on?
They kill him for a long time.
Yeah. But the deal is they've been planting little seeds the entire time about all these redundancies in Klingon anatomy.
The Klingons refer to it as the Brock Low. Almost every vital function in their bodies has a built-in redundancy in case any primary organ or system fails.
One of them that they weren't aware of was some kind of neurological redundancy that wasn't enough to help him with his spine injury, but is enough to help him recover from his spine surgery. And he starts like moving his chin around and taking little breaths, and they like flip on the life support again and start pumping him with new drugs, and looks like he's going to make a full recovery.
They vacuum out his underpants, which have been totally filled upon his death. We gotta get the wet dry shot back.
Oh yeah,
just sort of clean out that whole area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something it's something that they never talk about on those medical shows, but you know, Star Trek is not afraid to lean into.
You know what sucks is like
Aside from shop vacs?
Yeah. Is Riker is completely absent again from this. Like, yeah. they do a little around the horn of crew members being preoccupied during the surgery, and that's tastefully done.
Right.
But, like, when he dies, where is Riker? Riker should be there as much as Alexander. And if you're Worf, aren't you super sad that no one has warned Klingon Heaven that a warrior is coming? Like, no one yells.
I was kind of expecting Alexander to do that.
Me too. Maybe they recorded it and it was just too cheesy.
Yeah, it's possible.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
Worf bounces back. There's a final interaction between the two doctors who have been hating each other's guts so much this whole time. And I thought that Beverly was pretty immature about this whole thing.
Totally.
Like, yeah. Dr. Russell took a big risk, and it paid off, and she's getting the fucking silent treatment from Crusher.
I mean, on the one hand, I understand, like, you don't want to be nice to Mengele.
You don't want to normalize Mengele.
But on the other hand, she saved a good friend's life, and I think that deserves not to be silent treatmented, right?
Yeah.
Like, she knows that you disapprove. I think professional courtesy is okay in that scenario versus continued social discourtesy.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, like, on the one hand, Dr. Russell should be severely censured for what she did to that guy that
she should be in prison.
Some basic medicine.
Yeah.
like for sure she needs to have her license seized and, you know, I don't know, whatever the medical equivalent of being disbarred.
She needs to experiment in toilet hooch.
Yeah. Like there's a If there was any money in the Federation, there would be a major medical malpractice lawsuit gearing up for this this poor survivor of this crash, right? Because it's like, God, he just went through the most horrible thing you could go through, survives this terrifying crash on a planet's surface with hundreds of his fellow crewmates passing away, and he survives and all he needs is some light medical treatment, and this fucking crazy woman comes and tries some crazy experiment on him, and he dies.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess given that...
The punitive damages alone are going to be insane.
She deserves worse than silent treatment.
Yeah. But it's not really Beverly's place to be doing that.
Yeah.
So the last scene is a, like, Worf in physical therapy scene. He's got the like ballet bars on either side, and he's like learning how to walk again. And young Alexander is there to help him. It's a real touching, saccharine moment.
The episode. You get a close up on his Klingon bunions.
You do.
He has loafy feet in addition to loaf back and standard issue head loaf.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got loaf that, like, Frodo Baggins would balk at.
You kind of see the whole thing. Like, you really get a tour of Worf's body in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he has loaf on his dork?
Do they circumcise Klingons, if that's the case?
Well, I mean...
What do you think Klingon foreskin is like?
Based on what happened when they had his bar mitzvah ceremony, I'm going to assume that Worf is cut.
Oh, man. Yeah. God. Who knows what that's like?
It's not a fair assumption because, you know, that's not always compulsory, but...
Sure.
But I'm going to assume.
It's probably real gnarly.
Do you think it has a silhouette similar to that knife, Adam?
Well, if it does, you're not getting it out once it goes in.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows how their anatomy works?
Yeah, the button is Happy Family Button, isn't it?
Strange choice.
Yeah.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
I think I did. I mean, it's nice to get it feels like it's been a while since we've gotten a Worf-centric episode that isn't 1,000% about his family.
Yeah.
It seems like we don't get Worf unless we get family anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's also nice to have a Worf-centric episode that doesn't involve, like, the politics of the Klingon homeworld.
Yeah.
Which is interesting when it happens, but it's, I feel like, a little bit overdone at this point, maybe.
I'm a little done with Federation politics right now. I could probably get back into some shoot 'em ups, to be quite honest.
Hmm. Yeah, I could go for some shoot 'em ups.
Yeah. So, did you like the episode, Ben?
I liked it more than I thought I would. And I think on balance, it's like a pretty interesting episode. But I feel like it maybe made me wonder more about medical ethics than actually enlightening me about medical ethics.
There's the medical ethics thread, and then there's the right to life thread.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like the episode was persuasive in any way on either of those?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like totally unqualified for whatever reason.
You're qualified to state an opinion about yourself. Like, do you believe that if you were in Worf's condition that you would hope that someone would put you out of your misery? It's the pull the plug question that every married couple has to have, you know?
Right.
I sort of looked at Worf's circumstance in those terms, which is why when Riker objected so strongly, my immediate response to that was, whoa, Will, like, don't you at least have to consider this guy's wish? Like, if he's your friend and this is his custom, like, I found myself on that side of the issue in maybe a surprising way.
But I mean, I think that's like the basic problem in like all society interacting, you know, anytime society has to interact with sets of morals that are slightly different.
Yeah.
Like, I feel the same way about, like, a culture that forces women to wear headscarves. Like, I have, like, a reflexive negative feeling about that. But then I also have a negative reflexive feeling about, like, a law being passed to, like, outlaw that, because I feel like it's not the government's place to say.
Yeah.
And it's like one of those things where I really see the argument on both sides of this, and I don't really feel like I am confident enough to know what the right answer is. And I felt the same way with this conflict. Like, I can totally see where Worf's coming from, and I can totally see where Riker's coming from.
Do you think it's possible to rewrite this episode where Riker is willing to do what Worf asks and, for instance, Picard talks him out of it? Like, I feel like there needs to be one more point of conflict to really make it interesting. Like, it's not quite there for me, that single point of inflection on that decision with Riker. And the thing that's being asked of him.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if I was going to rewrite this episode, the only thing that I would really focus my energy on would be getting rid of Dr. Russell and writing it as Dr. Pulaski coming back to the ship.
Oh, that would have been amazing.
Yeah. That was all I could think of the entire time. I was like, this woman is like a C-minus Pulaski.
This woman can't drink.
Yeah.
Great, like, call.
Pulaski would have had a scene where she was, like, knocking back shots with Guinan, and then she's like, well, I gotta go do surgery on Worf. Bye.
Like the airline pilot in the lounge.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Hey, Ben, do we have anything on the blower?
Aside from a .08?
I'm talking about advertisements. Ben,
let's check.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a personal message here, first in the queue. It is from You Absolutely Know Who, and it is for Jason in the Union Park neighborhood of Boston.
That's very specific.
Yeah, it's also Jason with a Y, so that's even more specific.
I feel like Jason's going to know who this is.
Yeah, and the rest of us will just have to guess. Wish you a new life year with Riker's luck, Data's immortality, Worf's useful frankness on Yelp, Troy's insight, Geordi's secret jackness, Guinan and Rose badassness, and Picard's sexy diplomacy, as many good ideas as Wes, the boy, and as much love as Beverly with that Trill guy during their best days.
It's a lot of love.
If only Adam and Ben could see your hair. Man, sounds like Jason needs to have a hair cast episode.
Sounds that way. I mean, is You Know Who saying that we need to see Jason's hair because it needs critique? Are we? Boy. Is this a supercut situation here?
I don't know. I mean, that seems like one way to read it, and I would love to be involved with taking one of our viewers to supercuts.
It's like one of those remote segments on a late night show.
Yeah, somebody on one of our social networks was talking about how they started doing the Star Trek sideburn, where they get the pointy sideburn.
Ooh.
I'm kind of tempted to try that.
That's
interesting.
I don't
know if my wife would allow it, though.
I've got the, I grow facial hair terribly. And, one of the spots that is very difficult for me to grow facial hair is in between the beard and sideburn. There's sort of a hair desert there.
There's a demilitarized zone.
Yeah, and so I'm pretty tied to the length of my sideburns, unless I were to grow them out in length and sort of comb them down.
Mm.
Like a K-pop star?
Yeah, yeah. Do we have another message, Adam?
Sure do, Ben. It's from the dorky dog, and it's to the perky pigeon. Message goes like this. Happy birthday to my greatest Jen, my love, who is a peeper. It's been over 25 years since you started watching the show with me, and now we get to share it with our next generation. Here's to the continuing voyage of the USS Perky Bird, and may I always be your number one.
I love the idea of pet names that are actual pet names.
Yeah, yeah.
We should point out that Greatest Jen was spelled with a J in this scenario. Greatest Jen, like the name.
It's true.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, man, 25 years. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good run.
I am almost to 10 years of relationship with my wife.
Yeah.
And, man, it's been great. I'm not saying it hasn't been, but 25 years, quite an achievement, Dorky Dog and Pretty Pigeon. Good job by you.
Well, I like this round of P1s, Adam. It was two birthday messages that seemed to be as deep in the weeds with the self-referential in-jokes as our podcast has now gotten.
I'm glad our birthday messages aren't just us appearing from the kitchen, clapping in unison, singing a terrible restaurant song. So much better than that.
Because Warner Chappell illegally claimed to own the copyright of the real Happy Birthday song?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You get that hamburger restaurant birthday song. That's no fun.
No. Doesn't work. Doesn't work as well.
You just see the creeping death behind the waiter's eyes singing that song.
They know just as well as anybody that this is not classic Americana.
If you're interested in bestowing some of that classic Americana onto a friend or family member going through a birthday or any other life event, you can call Ben and I from the kitchen area. We'll come out and read your birthday message to anyone you want. Personal messages are $100. Commercial messages are $200. And they help with the ongoing production of our show.
Yarmouk, Angelad, and Tanagra.
I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusa today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS. What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi. This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I did. My drunk Shimoda is kind of like, I guess like, I'll give it to Nurse Ogawa, but I think what the real culprit here is like union rules about how many lines a character can get. Nurse Ogawa goes through this entire episode lineless until they get to the surgery scene, and then she has like 4 things that she says. Like, it's pretty clear that they were like, all right, we're gonna pay her for 4 lines. She's not gonna be a featured player. So there's at least 3 or 4 scenes where she is in the mix but totally silent in the episode because like the producers didn't want to fucking pony up and pay Nurse Ogawa a little bit extra to be a featured player, even though she's a, you know, a repeat character on the show at this point.
Yeah, and the way they frame her, like they frame her for dialogue even though she's not delivering. Right. In a way that like leads to expectations, right?
It seemed very clear to me a couple of times that she probably had a line in the first draft of the script and they like pulled it out right before to save a couple of shekels on the on the production budget.
Yeah.
Did you have a drunk Shimoda yourself, Adam?
I do. I mean, I don't know if you had as much of a difficult time as I did finding a Shimoda this episode. Found it pretty difficult, to be honest. What I did enjoy was the scene in surgery where they're just having a hell of a time with this back insertion. And part of it is this prop on the table, the backbone prop. And they're scanning it with lasers, and the lasers aren't really like boring through like the turtle shell that is his back. And Beverly's like, I thought you practiced this thing. And Nurse Russell's like, yeah, I did, and it only works like a quarter of the time. It's terrible. So she whips out her backup device, which is like, we didn't really paint the picture of this surgical set, but it's pretty sophisticated looking. There's like some lasers.
Yeah.
There's the standard issue barbicide. There's some like crackly lasers and neon. And then there's a couple of scanners. Well, scanner B that Dr. Russell produces is like a hotel room remote control. It's the worst prop we've seen, I think, all season. And
oh, man.
I just laughed at this prop. It's really bad. They could have grabbed anything off the table except for this thing.
Have you ever stayed in one of those hotel rooms with one of those clean remotes?
No.
Have you seen this?
No.
This is something I've encountered a couple of times in my travels where you walk into the room and there's a remote that is like specially engineered to be something that you can like hit with Windex to disinfect.
You can throw it in a dishwasher.
Yeah, and it's just like it's one of those things where I know that there are like real germaphobes out there that are terrified of the hotel remote, and I'm sure that they appreciate this, but it's one of those things where it makes you think about the fact that every other remote you've ever touched has probably been in somebody's asshole.
Yeah, I mean, what you're describing is the Merlin Mann rule. Have you heard about this? The Merlin Mann rule is that anything that can be in a human butthole in a hotel room has been in a human butthole in a hotel room.
That's very interesting. I mean, because I think that like when you see this remote and their kind of brand promise that it has been cleaned thoroughly,
is there a tapered tip and like some ribbing?
Well, you're gonna want a tapered tip, but you're also gonna want a flared base because you don't want it to go in and then get stuck. If you're gonna do some polar region stuff.
Now with anal sex toys, you're gonna want a flared base. That's all you I got.
Yeah.
Please continue. You were gonna go.
We'll cut all this out.
Yeah.
Adam, our next episode.
Hey, Ben, what are we watching for the next episode? Get us out of this bit.
Our next episode is season 5, episode 17, The Outcast. A rescue mission leads to a dangerous romance between Riker and a rebellious member of an androgynous race. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
They're all dangerous romances for one Will Riker, Ben.
Yeah, he likes a little element of danger, doesn't he?
I do like and remember this episode.
Yeah, well, we don't have any vetoes, so that's what we're watching, Adam.
I remember a husk being involved, Ben.
Yeah, you brought up that husk a couple eps ago. I'm excited to see if we see this husk or if it's just mentioned in passing.
As a young person, the idea of this husk was very memorable.
Did it inform anything about your sexuality as an adult?
Well, a very
Do you have a husk fetish, Adam?
A very brief interest in husk porn, but that's it.
You ever go on DeviantArt and search husks?
No, I haven't thought to until this moment. I'm going to do a little research before the next episode, Ben. I'll let you know what I find out.
I'm looking forward to that. Well, that will be our next episode. In the meantime, go on iTunes and leave a nice review for us. It helps people find the show. Go to maxfunstore.com and get some of our great merch. And hey, we are in the thick of preparing a plan for our upcoming tour, which is looking like it's going to happen later in the year, and also Greatest Gen Con 2017. If you want to be in the front line of people that learn about those things, I recommend you go to gach.biz/mail and sign up for our mailing list, because I think that that's probably going to be the first place that news goes.
We're not sending people a bunch of mail. It's just when we have announcements, and we don't have like, many.
Literally, we've never sent any mail to this other than here is a show we are doing, and here's how you can go.
It's one of the great mailing lists that way.
Yeah, we do not abuse this thing.
No.
We should thank Adam Ragusa and Dark Materia for our music. Thanks, gents. And if you want to interact with us online, there's a Greatest Gen subreddit. There's a great Greatest Gen Facebook group. And as always, the Greatest Gen Twitter hashtag is full of delightful things. And you can follow Adam at Cut for Time and me at Benjamin R. A-H-R.
That was a fairly complete conclusion, Ben.
Well, with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that's in the dungeon with that dungeon family, Adam. ATLians.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Really, really needed some bumpers on that joke.
It's got to be like at least a 35%er.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.